Welcome back. You're listening to the Silva Harapetian Show. We're continuing this week's conversation.
It is my personal opinion that I think we're going to see a lot of people with anxiety and eventually down the track with depression. The reason being is anxiety is obviously when you start to feel anxiety when you feel you've lost control. Feel that there's something that in your life, you lost control of your life or some aspects of it, and that causes anxiety. But when that becomes prolonged, so anxiety, when you are feeling anxiety, you're not feeling hopeless and you still have hope. Yeah? But when you start to lose the hope, that's the worrying time. That's the worrying time for people like me that I have to support clients. When individuals start to lose hope, that turns from anxiety into depression. Because in order to have depression, you need to experience extreme sadness and loss of hope. And I feel the longer this goes, longer this takes place, and the more isolated people are, we will see a shift from anxiety to depression.
How do we empower ourselves? How do we empower ourselves? Whether it's some of us actually have resources to reach out to therapists and have a support system in place for these types of things. And there are a lot of people who do not or don't feel like they want to, or there's shame around it or stigma around it. If there is someone listening who is wanting to take something away, that what are some things we can do to put into place to prevent that from happening?
So look, what I would, humans are designed to live in groups and herds. We're not designed to live individually. From millions of years ago until now, we don't live individually. That's why millions of years ago, people lived in herds and groups and families. They didn't have molecular families, nuclear families. They didn't have mother, father, and kids. You know, they had extended families, like so many other countries still. If you can maintain some kind of sense of family, whether you do, every so often you do Zoom meetings with your extended family, whether you do Skype or whether you do WhatsApp with your loved ones, try to do that. You need to put in effort to do that. You need to feel you are surrounded with your loved ones. Now, if there are people that don't have extended family, that's fine. You might have church group. You might have religious group. You might have some kind of university class.
Your friends might be your family, you know, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. If you have never been very big on people, you can adopt a dog, adopt a cat, do something that fills your jug, fills you in, fills you, satisfies you, gives you this sense of happiness. You know, some people are very happy to have dogs and cats and, birds and pets, not necessarily. That's fine. Whatever keeps you happy. This is the time to do it. If you have always wanted to do gardening and have never done gardening and you have this tiny garden or this tiny balcony, stop growing fruits and veggies. You know, have some purpose, have some meaning. Make sure you feel you are doing something.
That brings you joy. Something that brings you joy, that brings you satisfaction and happiness. When we talk about happiness, well, all of us have this vision of happiness being so grand, but happiness could really exist in the small moments in your life. And I think that's so important to remember. Having been through some challenges in my own life, I can say that the things that got me through to the other side was being able to look at finding happiness in the moments of the day and not necessarily being happy all the time, right? Because that's just impossible, particularly in this crisis. So whether it's a sunshine or a sunset or watching a kid's play or picking a flower or just, you know, look for those moments. I know that's worked for me. And I know that's what you're saying, is that find those moments that bring you joy. And there's been no better time than now when we're sheltering in place and having to stay home to do things that you've always wanted to do.
And get close to nature, you know, as you mentioned. Wow. I think nature is you know, we anecdotally say, if you are depressed, if you have very bad depression, go and hug a tree. Go and walk on the grass barefoot. Go and walk on the beach barefoot. We always say that. Go and hug a tree, you know. I actually have done it once to know what it feels like. It's actually bad.
Well, so, being a psychotherapist, you can't tell your clients to do that if you haven't done it.
Absolutely. So I had to hug a tree once to see what it's like, you know.
So what was it like?
It was okay. It wasn't that bad. I wouldn't recommend walking barefoot on grass or sand. I don't know. I mean, I could recommend, but I don't like doing it. But get close. If you have a backyard or front yard, you know, go and plant something. Go and water your plants, you know. Go and sit in the sun.
What
and
is it about? What is it about nature that somehow uplifts our moods? I mean, I know there's powerful truth to that, but
it's very powerful. Nature is extremely powerful. We humans often forget the strength of Mother Nature, and it's mother. It's a nurturing thing. Mm. It's giving, you know. Always remember, happiness is a journey. It's not a destination. Happiness is not something that you'll eventually get to and, oh, everything will be nice. No. Happiness is a way of life. It's a way of being, you know. And if you want to be happy, firstly, you need to listen to your body. If you're hungry, eat. If you're tired, sleep. So you need to be kind to yourself, you know. And if there's a book that you always wanted to read, go and find that book. You know, if there's knitting that you were doing and it's half done, go and find that knitting and finish that jumper. Mm. You know, like that. But why I say gardening and pets and things like that, because that's all part of, goes under the umbrella of nature. Mm. Right. You know, it's all things that are from nature. They're not plastics. They're not solid things. They're living things, you know.
Yeah. How much does access and technology and information and social media contribute and play a role in the level of anxiety and how quickly we escalate from anxiety to depression? How much does that contribute to that process?
We all need to limit how much we watch the news.
Right.
And we need to limit what. You need to be aware of where you get your source of information from and how much you listen. If you are listening to the news, and obviously bad news, 4 or 5 hours a day, it's not good for your psyche.
Yeah. It's so ironic to have this conversation, considering I spent my entire career in the news industry. But, you know, the times have changed. Back then, you know, you had appointment television. You sat in front of your TV at 5 o'clock or 5:30 to get your news for half an hour. That's when I got into the business. But the reason I ask about technology is because now everything is literally at our fingertips, right? And it's on our phone. So from the moment you open your eyes, at the moment you go to sleep, you can be scrolling and looking and updating, whether it's the news or people regurgitating the news or their opinion of the news or their perspective of this crisis or what they're going through. So regardless of what it is that you consume, I guess what I'm asking is the consumption and the access of the information that's available that we consume, that does have an impact on some level on the level of anxiety that we have and how quickly our anxiety turns into depression.
I don't think you've missed an enormous amount of essential news that you've missed in 24 hours if you check once a day, you know? And you need to remember that everything is going to be still intact, you know, if you check the news in 24 hours time.
Yeah. Any other recommendations, suggestions, anything else you want to talk about? I know we've talked about a lot of things in the last few days, you and I, but I know you made some notes and wanted to cover some things. Is there anything else that I haven't asked that you'd like to cover?
Look, I think we need to also remember that when we are talking about people who come from refugee backgrounds and war, we need to remember that these individuals may not necessarily have a trust in the government and people in authorities. So I've just made some notes here so I could mention. We need to make sure that... obviously everyone does their job and everyone has a role in this, that we provide the correct information and health and education to these individuals to know that if the government is saying you need to keep social distancing, you need to wash your hands, it's not a conspiracy, it's not something that... So they need to know that this is for their well-being, because some of these individuals come from communities and countries that there's a disconnect between the government and the society, yeah? And they often don't trust, and they always believe, oh, if the government says this, there's a hidden agenda in this. But we need to make sure that I make sure that I pass this information to all my clients, that if the government is saying social distancing, washing your hands, don't leave the house, there's no hidden agenda. This is for your own well-being, and you need to listen. So this is a huge challenge.
Well, that's it's not. I don't think it's just a challenge for people who have come from other countries and from who have experienced governments that they don't trust. I think that's also true for the United States, and I know that's true in Australia too. I think in general there is. And what's happening and how everything is being covered and how everything is, the information is being distributed doesn't help to foster trust in the government at the moment. It is important to talk about that because there are people who have not been listening to anything the government has been saying because they just historically have no trust in authority, right?
Yeah. Health education forms a huge part of our work, my work. Mm-hmm. And health education... is particularly a little bit difficult if you are dealing with individuals who have a lower literacy level. Now, I'm not going to mention countries or communities, but if you add lack of language skills to that, or lack of ability to use technology, multiplies the issue. So I think we need to be very mindful and not assume and always reinforce this health education to people.
I think it's important to honestly talk about these things and be real and raw about the conversation, because these are things that people are thinking and feeling and considering, but sometimes they don't know that's where it's coming from, and sometimes they won't speak about it out loud. But if, you know, it's part of the reason why I felt like I needed to do this, and because I do have the platform and I do have, you know, amazing people like you in my life that I can have these conversations with. And I think if one person takes value out of figuring out how to, you know, taper their anxiety and stop themselves from spiraling down and you know, then if it helps one person, then we've done what we need to do.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think this is the golden opportunity. If you have always wanted to have therapy, or if you have always been recommended to have therapy, and if you've always said, no, I can do it, I don't need anyone else, this is the time to reach out for help. This is the time, and just talk. And I think this is an amazing time that you don't have to be in a room with someone you don't know and share your stories. And it could easily take place over the phone, over WhatsApp or Zoom or Skype. So people would feel even safer than before that, you know, they have the ability to just press and end the session.
Mm.
So it is that if you still feel at the back of your mind that you would benefit from seeing someone, this is the time.
Yeah.
This is the time. And I am convinced that you will not regret.
Yeah. And essentially what you're doing is simply just having a conversation with someone who's willing to listen. And essentially what you're doing is maybe even having the types of conversations that maybe you cannot have or don't feel comfortable having with your family members or your friends. And the ability to be heard without judgment, there is value in that, because sometimes we tend to not share what we feel because we feel like we're going to be judged, just because if you feel it, then it's real and it's true, and there's a place for it, and it's important to share that. So thank you very much. Within all of that, I should have done this earlier, but I'm going to ask you, how are you doing? Because not only are you going through this process yourself and your family, and I know your dad is a big part of it, but you're also helping other clients cope with all of this other than being exhausted. How are you handling all of this? No, no. I just know because you said you were exhausted earlier before we got on the call. You just, and I know you've been working late hours. So,
Look, I'm feeling very positive. Still have a lot of energy, a lot of love to give to my clients and people around me. I feel fantastic. And I am approaching this sometimes with my public health hat, sometimes with my psychotherapy hat. And I am going with very open mind and open view that this could last for more than 3 months, could last for more than 6 months. And I always think, am I comfortable in my office, my house, to do this? Mm. So that's my first question. And I am surrounded with a lot of supportive people. I have a lot of support around me, which I think is something that people need to think about. Do you have support? What's your support network like? Revisit that. Maybe get in touch with your support people. So I do have a lot of people. I have had 2 phone calls from friends this morning. Phone call from my dad this morning, seen and got a kiss and hug from my family this morning. So just to remember that this isn't the end of life. You know, there's things that happen. There's things that can change. You know, everything is possible. But do live in the here and now. You know, I have learned that many years ago, to live in the here and now.
Yeah, actually, I was... before we got on the call, I reread your thesis, and I'm not going to lie, the first time I read it, I couldn't actually get through it because it felt so incredibly personal in so many ways, and I had never looked at the topic from the perspective of in the context that you wrote about, in the impact it has, not having a home. The impact it has on us in general, subconsciously. I just never connected the dots that way. And it was such a personal experience for me. But I also read about how you learn to live in the moment. So it was, yeah. I don't know if you want to share it, but I just wanted to share that with you.
Look, I don't know what it's like to have a home. I don't know. I still don't know. I feel incredibly appreciative and blessed and honored to live in Australia. But when you weren't born in a country, and I was 15 when we came to Australia, as comfortable as I am, I don't feel it's my home.
Yeah.
And I definitely don't think Iran is my home. I don't know, or maybe this is home and I'm confused, but it doesn't feel like home. So when I think about Iran, I get this feeling that I don't get when I think about Australia, but I'm not that comfortable in Iran. So there's a lot of confusion.
Yeah. And essentially we're even as appreciative as, and I feel the same way. I feel very blessed and honored to be living in this country. Right. But there is, that element of you were always a guest wherever you
Yeah.
are, whether you're in the States or in Australia or even back in Iran, we were guests in someone else's country, right? And I think you wrote something really poignant in your thesis about you feel like you're not deserving of being where you are because you're just thankful for being there. So that impacts how you see what your life and how what you accept in your life and how things transpire in your life. There's so many layers and complications to this experience. We can spend another hour talking about it. Thank you for taking the time and talking with us. I know you'd rather spend it with your family, and I, you know, for the
Okay.
for for
Thank
those for
you so
those of you
much.
wondering how she de-stresses, she sent me pictures of food she cooked the other day. Right?
Yes, so my self-care is making food and baking,
Yeah.
and my family absolutely loves it.
They reap the benefits of you being stressed or de-stressing in the process. But anyhow, thank you so much for joining us. For those of you who stuck around and were able to listen to this conversation, I hope you were able to take something from it. And if this encourages you and inspires you to have a conversation with someone else, or call a friend, or post something positive on social, please do so. And if you think one of your friends might benefit from this conversation, or your family members, nobody needs to know you're sharing this. You can just send them the link and have them listen to it. I think it's important that we continue to talk about this, not only personally, but also within our communities. I have to remind myself on a daily basis to be kind to myself, be kind to everybody around me, because we're all in this together. So, with
Thank
that, thank you so much. Appreciate you joining
you.
us.
Thank you so much.